Welcome to another edition of the 13th Hour Podcast. This is episode number 32, and I'm your host, Joshua Blum. And today we have a very special guest, also an author named Joshua, and he also writes fantasy. So this is a conversation that he and I had, and it is actually my second live guest that, you know, live being, you know, we taped it first and then I'm putting it here on the show. But it was a cool chance to kind of talk about some of the things that we share. And so I'm not going to blab about it further. I'm just going to jump into it. Just to say that that goes on for about 40 minutes or so. And if you are a writer, I think you'll find a lot of good information there. Because Josh shares a lot of, I think, helpful things about the process of doing it and the process of honing your craft. And then the other thing is that if you just ever wondered about what goes into making a book, what goes into getting the word out there about really anything, he talks a lot about a number of great things that I really wish I had learned about beforehand, and maybe people had talked about those things, but I think there's a lot of high-value content, as the internet marketers would say, in there. So I think if you're interested in any of those kind of things, including things like social media, writing books, whether it's fiction or nonfiction, I think there's something to be gained there. And if you're any kind of entrepreneur in any way, I think he talks about a lot of things that are, I think, were helpful. I don't think it was really our intention for the conversation necessarily to go in that direction, but since it's there, hopefully people can take from it what they will. So without further ado, I'm going to introduce Josh and let him talk about his books and further into the conversation that we had. And at the end of the podcast, usually I have like a closing riff from the 13th Hour theme. I'm actually going to, it's going to be something different. There's like a, I would say about a 4-minute track that's, I mentioned on a previous podcast that the since the 13th Hour was a book inspired by and paying homage to 80s fantasy movies, I figure that as a fun little thing, it should have a 80s style synth electric guitar kind of closing song, because they often had, you know, closing songs as the credits rolled. And so I figured it'd be fun to do something like that. And so I finally finished recording the backing tracks. There's a whole bunch of like synthesizer tracks and guitar parts and stuff like that. And I finally got them all put together and into one thing, and now I just have to record the vocals. So that's coming in the next couple of weeks. But the I'll leave you guys with the backing track, the instrumental part. And that is currently available for download free on Bandcamp. So the link will be there, as well as many links to Joshua Robertson's books and his publishing company. He also does a podcast on YouTube. So there's a lot of just a great stuff on there. So you can see the show notes for all that kind of stuff. So without further ado, let's get into the actual conversation. So welcome. This is Joshua Robertson, and he is joining me today for a talk. And it should be a lot of fun. So, you know, maybe what we could do is start out by talking a little bit about, you know, sort of how you got to this point and what sort of things you write.
Sure, I appreciate that. Thanks for having me on, Josh. Hopefully people won't get too confused by us both calling each other Josh on the show.
Right. I didn't even think about that, but yeah.
Yeah. I'm a writer in dark fantasy, which is sometimes called by a few different names, but it's really just kind of fantasy with some horror elements that are in the story. Started writing when I was a young kid, started writing short stories and horror stories when I was about 9 years old. Had a nice collection by the time I was an adolescent, finished my first novel by the time I was 17. And then I kind of lollygagged for 7-8 years as I rewrote the same stories over and over and over again and tried to hone my craft. And it wasn't until about last year that I released my first novel. And since then, I've released two more, as well as a selection of short stories. And just been having a lot of fun since then, kind of pushing things out there in a world that I created when I was in adolescence.
So you were in your teens when you created the story, with the sort of the world and the characters and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, in 1999, I finished the world, and it's a mess. I had...
Wow.
probably good gigs on my computer full of land masses and cities filled with religion and politics and NPCs and, you know, everything that you need within, you know, a world in order to make it alive.
So was it your intention that you would use all this information to create a book, or was it you were thinking along the lines of something else, or just for fun, or?
Honestly, writing was what it was all there for. Since I was young, I wanted to be a writer. It's kind of the thing that's stuck with me through life. No matter what job I've had or what I've been working towards, I always fall back to writing.
Gotcha.
It's the one thing I know that I'll do until the day I die. I'll never retire from it. I get really a lot of joy out of doing it.
That's great. Yeah. And which is, I think, probably what, you know, writers need to have. I mean, if you're writing for a job, I mean, it's definitely much, much different than you're writing for yourself.
I agree with you. I think a lot of people go out there wanting to write a one-hit wonder and become the next, you know, J.K. Rowling or, you know, the next George R.R. Martin. And really, realistically, that's not the way that it works. I don't think a lot of us go into writing thinking that I'm going to become rich off of doing this. It's really a passion we carry with us.
Sure. So when you were doing this, when you were, how old, you were like 17 or 18 or something like that?
Yeah, 17 is when I finished the first novel.
First novel. Yeah. Was it your intention that it was, that you were going to share this with, like you were going to publish it? Or is it more just something you were doing as a hobby, like you were writing this for fun? Or?
I honestly wanted to publish it. I had an agent when I was 16 years old, 17 years old. Yeah. And I had submitted it to her to work with. Honestly, I didn't think that I would, I'm kind of glad that I didn't go the route of publishing that novel because it was in no place to be shown to the world. but I accomplished it. And so I had a nice sense of completion in doing that. But, no, I had an agent at 16. I fully intended on going out and getting it published and working with it. Had a copyright as soon as I finished it. But I ended up just sitting on it. I still have it laying around to remind myself where I've come from. But that novel itself has never been seen by other eyes. Outside of the agent that I had.
Yeah. I mean, well, are you thinking about doing anything with that? Or that, did that become like some iteration of what you now have out today?
No, honestly, the stories I have out now are different than that original novel that was written. I think that one thing that I found, which I know that I've talked to the offline on this, I'm also the owner of Crimson Edge Publishing. And so we have a lot of submissions that come into our press frequently that my acquisitions editor looks at. And one of the things that I think is common among writers is that they stick with the same manuscript for a long period of time where they're just hashing out over and over and over again on this work that they've been working on since adolescence, well into their, you know, adult years. And they change as a writer over time.
Yeah.
And by sticking with that same manuscript, they get caught up in these circles in the story and they can't make it better than what it was. And it's really one of those things where, as painful as it is, they have to scrap it, put it to the side and start the story over and kind of embrace that new style of writing that they have and move forward from that point. And that's what I did with that. I sat to the side, you know, it's 140,000 words of garbage. It would never be publishable. But it allowed me to grow to make the next novel that much better.
Yeah. That is a lot. I mean, you put a lot of time, I'm sure, into that 140,000 words. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the novel that's out, my first novel that I published last year called Melkorka, which has become a bestseller in dark fantasy on Amazon. I rewrote that novel 7 times completely from scratch. So it's another about 800,000 words that were thrown down the drain before it became what it is now. And it was really one of those things. I wrote it out completely, threw it away, started back over and rewrote it again. Because writing's a craft. It takes a lot of practice to get good at it.
Do you think that was there a particular, like a cue or something that you, that kind of lets you know that, you know what, this is not quite ready for public consumption just yet? Like, was it more of a, like, what was your, like, stand or, like, your the bar that you knew you had to get over?
You know, I really found people that would give me real criticism. All of us as writers can find those people who say, oh, yeah, you finished a book, it's great, and they read it and they give you this lavish praise. I had people that were close to me that really just let me know what was real, what wasn't. I mean, they laid down the book and they said, yeah, you can't let this go out. All your characters, even though they have different hair color and different eye color, they're exactly the same character. There's no depth in the character.
Right.
Or, you know, you have plot holes all over the place. Or you're using really passive language, and you get lost in the, maybe not in the dialogue, but in the composition of the story, and it doesn't really have a lot of depth to what it is that you're trying to tell. Or you're missing a theme in the
right.
story.
Sure.
But I had folks that would really just shoot it to me straight. And it took me a long time to listen to them. For a long time, I was like, no, you don't know what you're talking about.
Right, right.
But when I started listening to people that were willing to give me the criticism, that's when I got better.
Yeah. And, you know, you're definitely right. I mean, there's definitely people who will say what you want them to hear. And it's nice. It's not very helpful. Or I'll take a copy of your book and put it on their shelf and never read it and be like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, we get that all the time.
Yeah,
don't
we? Right. But how did you go about finding those people, the people that will give you that kind of honest feedback without just saying, well, this sucks, and just that doesn't help necessarily?
Yeah, I think it had to do with getting into writing groups. Mm-hmm. It had to get with people that took writing as seriously as I wanted to.
Yeah.
And it really started with forming friendships with them and kind of making a pact with each other that we're going to get better at what it is that we do.
Right. Sort of the idea of you surround yourself with people that are more experienced and you end up, you know, going
up
as a result, you know. Yeah.
Yeah, you surround the people, surround yourself with people that you want to be like.
Right. Whatever that expression is, you know, you try to surround yourself with people that are better than you and you rise to the occasion or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how long do you think it took for you to get to the place where you are now? In terms of, or how long did it take, do you think, for you to get to the place where the writing is, I don't want to say easy, but it at least is, you feel comfortable with where you're at?
That's going to be a painful answer for a lot of listeners.
Well, you know, the reason I ask that is because, you know, people will often, I mean, many people, like, obviously have an interest in writing a book, and
mm-hmm.
they often want to know what you have to do to do it, and I don't know. There's a part of me that kind of always wonders, should the answer be like the reality of it, which is sometimes painful, or should it be like, you know, just a lot of people say, well, you just keep writing, you know, just write, you know, every day. And it's a very vague answer. So just throwing that out there.
Yeah. Honestly, I'd say 10 years.
Yeah.
I mean, I took a lot of time. Willing to make mistakes and really be bad at something. And I think that writing is one of those things. I had to be willing to really suffer through throwing a lot of words down on paper over and over and over again. I don't think that it takes everybody 10 years, but when I look at kind of the history of some of the infamous writers that we know about, and I'm sure I'm going to throw out the wrong name, but I want to say it's Thoreau.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't even start publishing until he was in his 30s.
Sure.
That's when he started putting material out there. J.K. Rowling sat on her documents for a long period of time before she started putting them out there and had to go through and edit them.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of us that write through our 20s that don't really get anything out there for public consumption until we're hitting adulthood.
I appreciate that you're making the bar for adulthood, like, 30 and above. I mean,
I'm looking at psychology. I'm
separating right.
versus adulthood with Erickson, but yeah.
Right. Yeah. No. You know, it's kind of funny. I feel like there should be like a club / maybe support group for all the people that sat on their manuscripts for years, because I did the same thing. So I wrote 13th Hour when I was like 18 after I graduated from high school. And so the, you know, it's very similar to what you were saying. Like, you know, the thing that I created was, you know, quite different from what it is today. But, and it took, you know, 16 years or something like that.
You know, yeah. In order to
revising and just like you mentioned. So.
Yeah. And I've read your work and you've done a really nice job. I mean, the thing that I've seen in your particular work in your 13th Hour stories is you do a really nice job painting the scene in the story and letting the reader walk along with the characters there and see things unfold around them, so you're really standing there side by side with the character. The active language in your stories, the word choice that you use, those things that you've kind of mastered over time in doing that with your stories, Joshua, are not things that most adolescents have the ability to capture.
Yeah.
It took time in order to do that.
Well, Thank you. You said that a lot more articulately than I could have put together. I probably sound like an idiot saying that, but yeah. Yeah. So thank you. I appreciate you reading them. And I'm sure, like, you know, having read some of your stories as well, that, there was one that you wrote, which was the sort of your retelling of the Beowulf myth.
Yeah. Grimm's Delir.
Yeah. Which I loved the way you kind of capped it off. I won't spoil it for the audience. By telling them the ending, but, you know, I was totally caught off guard, and I thought that that's not a thing that I think you would get out of a teenager.
Yeah.
You know, often you get sort of work that pays homage to and sometimes, imitates, stuff, you know, we all start that way, I think, but
there's so many things I want to say about Grimm's Delir, but yeah, I don't want to give away the ending, but,
sure.
That story is so short. I really wanted to capture what, you know, Beowulf had to offer for a lot of us in the literary world.
Yeah.
But I also wanted to point out that our idea of hubris in the modern world isn't as well as accepted as it might have been back there when Beowulf was originally written.
Sure. Well, just for the reader who may not have read the story, I mean, you know, obviously it's taking the story of Beowulf. You know, warrior, you know, fights monster, basically. And it's putting it in a slightly different context. I mean, is there a story behind why you chose to rewrite it the way you did?
I think really I just wanted to have a message about pride and how pride can, I don't even know how to word this without giving away the ending, but how pride can...
Sure. Sure.
Yeah, how pride can affect us, whether good or bad, in the end, if we don't keep ourselves in check, or really too much of anything can be self-defeating.
Right.
But I think I do that with a lot of my stories, and I know that you've read a couple of them, the longer works. I don't know if you've had a chance to kind of delve into, but...
The Sellsword sort of saga, I guess, yeah.
Yeah. But even my Thrice Nine Legends series, I like to write things that challenge your idea of what good and evil are and what right and wrong are. And I kind of live this own philosophy where I don't necessarily see things through a lens of good and evil or right and wrong. It's more of action and consequence. And I like to test the actions that we might not normally take and see what the consequences are of those actions.
So in other words, taking, you know, sort of using the characters as kind of almost a parallel to what people might be thinking, you know, in real life, but not actually necessarily doing.
Yes.
Sort of a safe way of, kind of exploring some of those themes, or just an alternate way of exploring those themes. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Hawkers is actually a fun one with the Sellsword that you're mentioning, because that one didn't start off as a story. That started off as a, role-playing game that I was doing with friends.
It does sound like it. Yeah, it sounds like, you know, it's Dungeons and Dragons type of thing. Yeah.
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 I built that entire city in 48 hours. I stayed up like a whole weekend building this complex four-layer city of the rich to the poor with all these characters in it, and worked for a setting to play for a tabletop game.
Yeah.
And played through it with a few weeks, and life kind of got in the way, and so we stopped playing, and I just kind of delved it into a story.
Okay, nice.
Yeah. The second piece of that one, you have a Midwinter Sellsword, which is the first one, and then Gladiators and Thieves is the second installment. I'm writing Ashes to Ashes right now, which will be the third part of that, and should be out here in the next month or two.
Gotcha.
And then on Wattpad, I have Eadfell, which is an extension of that story, so you can get more into the characters and more into the world by reading that first story on Wattpad.
Okay. Yeah. I actually just put a short story on Wattpad. I don't know if you use that as a kind of a means of generating suggestions and things like that, or just sort of just put it up there for people to read and kind of.
I've honestly just now kind of gotten into Wattpad. I'd be interested in hearing your experience on there and what you know about it.
Yeah, same. Yeah, exactly. I know nothing other than the guy who wrote The Martian put his book up there and people seem to like it.
Mm-hmm.
So I just put a few chapters of a story up there just to, because I'm thinking of turning that story into a novel and, I was going to just point a few friends to it and see what they, you know, as I make modifications to see what their take on it is.
So what's the, if you don't mind me asking, what's the plot line behind it?
So it was actually for a writing contest, and it was a retelling of the fairy tale Sleeping Beauty. Mm-hmm. So I did it. It was a modern day kind of thing, and the prince in the story is a doctor who encounters a patient who has this mysterious illness where she falls asleep all the time. And so I kind of wrote it from that angle, and and it has a darker side too, where the prince is cursed with this ability to cure people, but also he gets a certain amount of time removed from his life as well, and so he has the ability to cure this very interesting and interesting patient who no one knows how to help, but he would chop a certain amount of time off his life. And so he goes through the story, you know, kind of battling this this dilemma that he has and trying to figure out, you know, how this curse came to be. And so I had a lot of fun writing it. The Sleeping Beauty story is actually kind of weird. You know, they made a point in the contest to say, like, mm-hmm. it's not the Disney version. And mm-hmm. when you go back and kind of examine the actual version, they're kind of weird. And Sleeping Beauty plays very little part in it. So anyway, I had fun writing it, and in trying to make it something that would fit into a short story, I ended up cutting out some stuff that, I kind of wanted to add. And, so I think I'll try to turn it into a novel.
Yeah, I really like that. I like any story that has this supreme power, but it kind of comes at a cost type of thing.
Yeah, power and responsibility, kind
of. Yeah, thing. Yeah, I think that's great. Which I know you haven't read my Thrice Knight Legends books that are out there. I got Annerfell, which is mm-hmm. a standalone novel that me and my brother co-wrote. And then Melkorka is the first in a series, and then Dindare just came out recently, which is the second one.
Right.
But in the story, you have the Highborn, who have this power called Kaldastival, which is their magic that they use. But every time they use their magic, it takes off years from their life.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And so every time they cast magic,
cool you for see them, really, but.
Yeah. But you see them age whenever they cast magic. And so there's always a cost at it. I like that.
Yeah. So, so that one just came out. I know that, and that was actually, I think that's how we actually connected, right? It was that, you threw, is it Goodreads? I can't remember now, but, yeah, I ended up featuring that your last book on my blog, and I definitely look forward to reading them. I think are there other things that you want to if you could just give like a sort of a summary for the audience about, you know, what the sort of world is and what those books are kind of about.
Sure. We'll talk about the Kalandar series, sure. Which was kind of based off of a dream that I had. But if you've ever seen the movie Legend from 1980s, there's a goblin in that movie called Blix. And my main character is much like Blix. He's a little red demon type of character who is a slave to these magic users called the Highborn.
Uh-huh.
And the story follows him through his eyes as he is following his masters around who are trying to protect the fabled ash tree, which a lot of us would know as the Tree of Life, or the World Tree.
Okay.
And so the ash tree is in danger of being damaged by demons that are coming from the netherworld. And as the ash tree is destroyed, the old gods are being released into the world. And so it's his journey in trying to protect the ash tree and keeping the old gods from coming out. And, you know, kind of that fatal cause of, you know, everything could come to an end as a result to that. But it's really also looking at his growth of becoming a slave and kind of embracing his own liberty as well, and learning that he has choice and freedom too.
Sure.
And then Annerfell is the standalone novel, and it takes place 80 years prior to Melkorka. And it gives you a little bit of the story before the story. It's like I don't want to call it a prelude, but it shows why the things in Melkorka take place. And it follows these two brothers who are underneath the thumb of their father, who wants immortality.
Uh-huh.
And he decides the best way to achieve immortality is by killing the god of the dead. And so he sends his two sons off to kill the god of the dead. And it's following them and trying to achieve that, which sparks all the events in Melkorka.
In the next books. Okay.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you've spent like a lot of time, you know, delving into this and creating this. when you go and try to explain this to somebody else, like, what do you do? Like, this is like a very weird thing, and I've only recently come up with an answer when people ask me, so what's your book about? I'm like, oh man, I don't know. Just go look it up on Amazon or something. Like, it's such a weird thing to try to talk about your own stuff. And, I don't know. Do you have you start very general and say it's a fantasy, or what is your take on that whole thing? Cause that's a very weird thing, I think, as a writer sometimes.
Well, I've been told that I'm kind of unique in the way that I perceive my books, because I really approach them as themes. Annerfell is about sacrifice. Melkorka is about loyalty. Dine Dare is about friendship.
Gotcha.
And all of them have strong messages regarding those three elements. Outside of that, it's a dark fantasy novel about, characters that are trying to protect the Tree of Life. And that's kind of where I leave it at. But I also find difficulty in that. I think that every writer will say the hardest part of writing is not writing the book or editing. It's writing that blurb on the back of your book.
I just went back and redid parts of mine, or relooking at them, because I mean it's hard. I don't know if you go to fairs or like sort of live events and sell your books there. But obviously people will look at the covers and they say, so what's it about? And
they always say you need to have a good, 1 minute pitch, 15 second pitch elevator speech to do about it. But honestly, no, Josh, I haven't had a chance to go to fairs. So all my stuff has been online.
Yeah.
I'm kind of embedded in Goodreads. I have a couple writing groups on Facebook I'm involved in.
Right.
But yeah, I'm up here in Alaska, so our opportunity for book fairs is pretty slim and few and far between.
Gotcha. I mean, well, do you, are there people that, that you know that who also read, and are happy to, read your work? And I definitely know a lot of folks who are, they're interested, but not that interested. If you know what I mean?
I'm not sure I'm quite following.
Obviously, many people have, friends, on social media or who will track your work and so forth. But getting people to actually sit down and read it and spend the time to, devote the time to do that is an entirely different thing. It probably is a function of the kind of society that we live in today, where things tend to be fast paced and there's a lot of distractions and things like that. I don't know if you've run into that yourself, or found frustrations.
If I understand your question correctly, I think this is something that a lot of us writers run into, is that finding other writers is fairly easy. Finding readers is fairly difficult.
Sure.
I know lots of people that write, lots of people that are interested in writing, people that want me to read their books because they've written a book.
Sure.
Finding people who really just stick to reading and are interested in just reading novels has been, a hard thing to do. I'll tell you, in terms of marketing and getting my book out there, I've sold more books by word of mouth than I have by any other marketing scheme. That writers are told to use, whether it's promoting them or paying for ads or what have you. Word of mouth is still the best way. So a lot of it is getting a book to a friend, having them read it, and then handing it to five more people.
All these things. It's so weird because, I mean, I don't know this for a fact. I have zero data to back this up, but I have a feeling like 10 years ago, your average author probably didn't spend as much time, talking about Twitter. I mean, I don't even know if there was a Twitter 10 years ago, but Facebook and all the social media kind of stuff that I don't know if it's necessarily expected of people today. I definitely know people who are successful without any of that stuff and have zero idea how to use a computer. But it sort of is the strongly recommended kind of thing that you do, that you engage with your audience in this whole social media kind of way. And so what is your take on all that stuff?
I think it's definitely a need. I mean, there's certain things I think in social media that are necessary for authors, especially if you're with a small press or if you're an indie author. I think Goodreads is a good place to be at. I think a Facebook writing group is a good place, and I think Twitter's also a necessary thing. I've written a couple of articles on this, and I've talked about this in other interviews as well, but I think that relationships is where it comes down to for authors. You have to form a solid relationship, a genuine, real relationship with your readers, and be genuinely interested in what's going on with them.
Right.
And I think that if you are that way, you'll find yourself being more successful in selling books.
Yeah. I don't know if you read any stuff by Stephen King, but...
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I always get the impression that... So right now I'm kind of going through... I don't know if you've read the comics or listened to any of the books of the Dark Tower kind of series, but he often includes like a little letter at the back, like where he talks about what's going to be happening in the next book. I am assuming he wrote that before he actually knew what he was going to write. So I think that that really, I often get the impression he's talking directly to you as a reader, and it's a very nice, I think it's a kind of a cool thing. It makes you feel kind of personally connected to him as a writer, even though, you know, he's got a zillion different, you know, readers that could possibly, you know, engage with him, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would agree with you. I know there's certain writers on Twitter that I engage with from time to time, and I'm more apt to purchasing their novels and reading their stuff. R.A. Salvatore, I've talked to a couple of times on Twitter, and it's just that engagement of talking back and forth with them. It's like, yeah, I'm going to keep reading your stuff.
Yeah.
Now, of course, I've been a fan of his since I was, you know, 13 years old, so I've been reading his stuff for a long time anyway, but just having that engagement and seeing that he takes the time to engage with me definitely motivates me to want to go and continue to read his books. Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of funny because in a way that all that social media kind of stuff, it comes down to the very old fashioned kind of personal relationships you ultimately need to make with people in order for it to be effective really at all. Like in pretty much any, you know, they always talk about commenting and taking an actual interest and not just sort of spamming the buy my book kind of thing onto social media, which, you know, I mean, I don't know if anybody really pays attention to that.
Yeah, I'd agree. I know on my Twitter I have a pinned post of what it, you know, my most recent novel is or what it is that I'm doing. But I spend a lot of time on Twitter just engaging with fans and talking to people back and forth. I have a lot of folks that direct message me regularly on there.
Yeah, you have a humongous what do you call it, following or thing?
I mean, I got over 20,000 this past week. I kind of blew my mind. I'm thinking that only last summer I had maybe 120. So but yeah, I tell people if you're going to message me on Twitter, you know, you got to message me in a tweet because I get maybe 300 direct messages a day. I can't keep track of them.
Like, your thing is probably goes, you probably can't keep up with it. So
yeah, you got to message me somewhere else. It's hard to keep track of direct messages. They're not the best way to get a hold of me.
You know, if, is there any particular, words of wisdom or advice that you have for people that are thinking about getting into this or, you know, kind of on the fence
in your and getting into writing?
Writing, or if they're already writing, then publishing and doing the whole thing that we do.
Well, we kind of talked about what my two general pieces of advice are, and you shot one of them down because one of them is usually keep writing.
Not necessarily like, obviously, right. But I meant it in the context of like, you know, you can write, whatever. I'm not going to bother to explain it because it's, because I think you're right. I mean, obviously that is the thing is to keep at it. So
I think the big piece of advice is, listen to the people that give you real criticism. Don't get hurt when they say your character is, you know, one dimensional, or they say you're using too much passive language, you need more of an active voice, or I'm not connected with the character because your narrator's voice is too strong. There are different types of writing that reach different readers, and there's many different ways that you can express yourself through writing. But there is also a lot of wisdom that can be had through people that have found some success in writing. And I think it's worth listening to them and taking the time to listen to them.
You have to
humble yourself.
It's a humbling, experience to do all this stuff. So I think, definitely good advice. I don't know, you know, kind of along the same lines, is there, you know, for the folks that are kind of already into this and are maybe in their first year or first 6 months or whatever, how would you have any thoughts or advice for them about how they can go about finding readers or finding an audience? Maybe not readers necessarily is a little bit too specific, but how to go about finding that audience of people who would appreciate what they do.
Yeah. I think the best thing for writers to do is have a newsletter. I know many that have one, but having a newsletter and letting people know about that newsletter, you can let people know about it on Twitter or a Facebook group, or what have you. But in the back of your eBooks, have a link to your newsletter for people to sign up for it. Let people regularly know about that, because the difference between having an ongoing blog and having a newsletter is people volunteer to have your newsletter. They're asking for that information to come to them through their email so they can learn more about you as a writer and what it is that you're doing and getting updates about you.
Yeah.
All those other avenues of marketing and promotion, you're pushing it down people's throat. You're shoving it at them. You're trying to force it upon them. And it's not as well accepted. So if you want to really build a readership, make a newsletter and have people sign up for it.
And how
Don't force them, but ask them.
Right. How long would you suggest someone give that, like, a time to build up their mailing list, I guess, for lack of a better term?
In a year's time, just on average, you're probably going to see somewhere between 40 and 80 sent up for a newsletter in a year.
Yeah.
So it's going to take you 2 to 3 years. I mean, most folks would tell you that if you publish one novel per year, you're going to see about a 3 to 5 years before you start seeing some real growth in terms of a fan base. I started building my fan base 2 years prior to my release of my first novel, which helped me out greatly, I think.
That's great advice, I think, for the people that are, you know, or delaying on this, and being like, well, maybe my novel's not quite ready for publication yet. You can actually start some of this now.
Yeah, you start building your fan base now. Start reaching out to people. Start giving little snippets, you know, little previews.
Yeah.
Don't wait until you release your first novel. And once your first novel is out, this was the best advice I had. I released my first novel. About a month went by. I was so hung up on sales and trying to get it out there and let people know about it. And I had a writer more successful than me come to me and say, Josh, you finished your first novel. Leave it alone. Go write the next one.
Yeah.
And that's what I did. Don't spend your time for 6 months just trying to have that one hit wonder and throwing it out there and getting people to get it. Build your backlist, keep writing, keep putting out material. That first novel will sell better after your second and third and fourth have come out.
Yeah. Which is, I think, humbling, in itself, right? I mean, because I think sometimes, and you know, I talk about this sometimes, with other people who do other kinds of creative things, and, you know, you put a lot of effort into those things and a lot of yourself goes into those things, and it's hard to I think for sometimes people to kind of just say like, okay, it's not going to be perfect, I'm just going to put it aside, I'm going to go on to the next thing that you know, get on with your life. And I think that's probably a learned skill like anything else. That's really
I think it's a great thing to do, and I'm sure that you can do this, Josh. You can go back and look at your book that you wrote. You can look at the 13th hour, and you can probably still find mistakes in it, and it still makes you cringe, and you want to go back and fix all those little pieces.
Right.
But you can go and write the next novel, it'll be that much better. And Tolkien said the same thing in his novels. He reads back through his novels when he was done, and he still finds mistakes in it that a lot of readers won't find. But for him, it makes him cringe. Yeah. And every novel gets subsequently better than the last one that you wrote. You just have to keep writing.
So let me ask you this. Do you read your own books? Do you every now and then go back and read them? Or do you like, find a typo on page 32?
Occasionally I do, but generally I go back and read them when I'm getting ready to write the next one, just to make sure that everything flows together.
Yeah.
I don't sit down and read them for enjoyment.
Yeah.
Which makes it that much worse.
Well, you know, what do you do for enjoyment, just in general?
There's quite a few things I'm involved in. I have my own podcast. I have The Writer's Edge, and so I enjoy talking about writing on that. Because I also run Crimson Edge Publishing, I spend a lot of time helping manage the company and looking at things that are coming in and trying to help build the company out. Mm-hmm. But in terms of just relaxing and having fun, I have 5 kiddos of my own.
Five.
My five Right. Yeah, my five kiddos keep me pretty busy.
God bless you.
Yeah. Yeah, thanks. I like to play Dungeons and Dragons. I do that every week. I love cooking. I'm kind of on a Dub Smash craze right now with some of my friends, so we bug each other with the Dub Smash app. Go hiking, go walking around, and enjoy nature. So, yeah.
Do you take inspiration from any of those other aspects of your life into your writing, or is that sort of a separate thing in itself?
Well, definitely. I tell people all the time that my kids teach me more about life than I could ever hope to teach them.
Sure.
There's so many things that you can see through a child's eyes that are just absolutely remarkable.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's seeing those nuances that really encourage me to write certain stories. When I see them, the way that they handle friendship or the way that they handle dilemmas, and they're always looking for that righteous path, it definitely inspires me to make characters that can emulate those same childish traits.
Yeah. And I guess, when you are creating your characters, and do you find parts of aspects of your family or your children or something like that creeping into that, into the characters that you create?
I don't know how you can make a character that doesn't have some aspect of yourself or the people around you creep into it.
Sure.
Absolutely. I don't know that I ever necessarily make the distinction. I don't usually make a character and be like, oh, I'm going to make this like this person that I know. But, you know, there's only so many characteristics that we can usually find in one another that stand out. And I think that there's definite times where I see certain traits kind of start coming out of my characters. And there's even certain characters I'll be like, oh, I want to make this character really self-serving. I want to make him really selfish and arrogant. And I kind of pin him with those traits. And after about 3 or 4 chapters, I see him start to develop a personality of his own as he starts interacting with other characters in the book. Mm-hmm. And then I have to go back and rewrite those first few chapters to really make sure that he's consistent throughout the story.
Yeah. You're giving your characters some room to grow and, you know, getting to know them. So yeah, no, it's a cool process. You know, speaking of just, you know, your books and stuff like that, you know, we're coming up on almost 40 minutes, of talking. Is there anything that you want to, if people were interested in your stuff, how would they go and find more about you?
I think the best way to go to find things about me is Amazon. I am on Barnes & Noble. I'm also on Smashwords. But I really like to direct people to Amazon to look for books.
Sure.
Grimm's Delir, like we talked about, is a really quick way to kind of delve into some of my stuff, but it is written differently than my other material. But it's a quick 99-cent, 3,000-word story, you know, based off of Beowulf.
Sure.
But I think my Amazon author page is probably the best way. And I usually encourage people that if you want to read something of mine, start with Annerfell. Annerfell is kind of the introductory book of my series and my primary works. And so that's the best book to go grab.
Okay. So if you just Google Amazon plus Joshua Robertson, you should be able to come up and find the
page. Yeah, absolutely. I think I'm in the top few hits on Google. So yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that probably has links to ways to connect with you social media wise and blah, 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 all that kind of stuff.
Absolutely.
Your massive Twitter profile. And,
Twitter, I'm Robertson Writes. And so that's a good way to try to find me.
Gotcha.
I use the fantasy chat hashtag, for most of my conversations, and I do polls and stuff on there.
Fantasy chat. I did not know that.
Yeah. And then, we, also have a Crimson Edge book club that's on Facebook, that I think we're up to 120, 130 people in that book club now.
Oh, great.
And so we also use the fantasy chat thing. I'll tell you, the polls in the Facebook chat are hilarious compared to the ones that I get on Twitter, because you can add your own comments in there. But, yeah, the same thing. We hashtag fantasy chat on Facebook.
Yeah. That's awesome. Well, you know, I don't know if there's anything else you wanted to say, but I appreciate you coming on. I've had a great time. You know, feel free to come back anytime you are free.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Had a lot of fun, too. I would like to add one more thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Josh, just so folks know, if anybody is a fantasy writer and they're looking at getting a short story published, Crimson Edge, if you go to crimsonedgepress.com, We've recently just opened up submissions for an open call for our Maidens in Magic anthology. Okay. They are stories about female leads. You want a strong female lead character in a short story between 15,000 and 25,000 words. And just have that submitted by June 1st. That's when submissions close. We're going to take some of the few best and put them in there. It will be a paid gig, so you will be receiving royalties on that on both an ebook and a print book form. So if you got a short story laying around that you just need to format, or you're looking at writing a new one, that's where to send it.
And do writers retain the rights to their story, or do they give it over to the publishing company? How does that work?
We will have rights for 1 year on that story, and then they will go back to the writer.
Gotcha. Okay.
Good question. Yeah.
Cool. All right. So get those submissions in there if that is your thing. Otherwise, thank you so much for coming on, and hope to talk to you again in the future.
Sounds good. I appreciate it.
Okay.
Well, thank you, Josh, for coming on. And ladies and gents, you have reached the end of the show. Thanks, as always, for listening. If you haven't subscribed to the show, you can do so on iTunes. It's a quick and easy way to get all the episodes in one spot. You can have access to at least the text of the show notes. But if you want to get the actual show notes with the links, it's really easy. Go to the website, which is 13thhour.wordpress.com. It's 13thhr.wordpress.com. And there you can get all the access to the show notes with links and so forth from each episode, including the ones from this one. In addition, you can sign up for the mailing list on the website. On the main site, you will see a section that says, Get My Free Book. And if you've somehow made it this far without entirely understanding what the 13th Hour and the podcast is all about, well, congratulations. But you can actually figure it out for free, because you can get a free, basically, demo copy of the 13th Hour when you sign up for the mailing list. So grab your free copy and see if it's something that's right for you. And you actually get advance notice on some things. I don't send out a lot of emails because it just gets spammy and stuff like that, and I don't have the time to write them. But I do want to let people know about certain free things that are happening. And so, for example, until the 22nd, for example, there is an Amazon giveaway for a children's book that I wrote called Your Star Will Glow Forever. And you, as a mailing list person, find that out first. So sign up for the mailing list, and if you have any other comments or suggestions that you like the interview style format that I've gone to over the past couple of weeks, if you like that, just leave a comment below. If not, give me some suggestions for what you would like to see different on the show. Open to whatever. So take care, thanks for listening, and I'll see you next week.